Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Adam Vingan here with you on Monday morning. A lot to get into today, of course. We will discuss the Tennessee Titans' latest loss, 34-10 to the Buffalo Bills. We'll talk Predators, 0-5-0. Only team in the NHL with outstanding points, so they are the worst team in the NHL. We will discuss the Nashville Predators. We will discuss Tennessee knocking off Alabama in a highly entertaining game. And let's just give our props right now to Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt football, ranked in the top 25 for the first time in 11 years, Willie? Do I have that correct?
I believe they were in the top 25 at the end of the season in 2013. Mm-hmm. By the end of the, they had the back-to-back 9-4s. At least one of those years, I think they were in the final poll. It's the first time, I think I read this right, first time they've been in the top 25 during the season since the Bobby Johnson 5-0 start where ESPN Game Day, I know a lot of people don't believe this, ESPN College Game Day did come to Nashville in 2008, and Vanderbilt beat Auburn to go 5-0. They got into the top 25 then, only to then lose 5 of the last 6 or 6 of the last 7, and get into the Music City Bowl, barely.
You know why?
And then beat Boston College in the Music City Bowl. Downtown, I was there. It was freezing.
You know why? You know why they went on to lose 6 games? Rat poison. It was rat poison. They talked about being in the top 25, and everybody was happy and fat and full and sitting on their couches. Rat poison. Vandy, don't buy into the rat poison. Don't buy into it.
To confirm Willie's.
Don't eat the rat poison.
To confirm Willie's information, according to the Vanderbilt Hustler, this is the first time that the Doors have been ranked in a midseason edition of the AP poll since 2008.
Okay. Vanderbilt, don't buy into it. Don't eat the rat poison. Keep your head down. Keep trucking. Keep fighting. Keep digging ditches.
Speaking of College Game Day, you know who probably screwed Vanderbilt out of College Game Day in Nashville? Texas. Yeah. By losing to Georgia. So we will not see another number one team in Nashville this weekend. It will be the number 5 Texas Longhorns against the number 25 Vanderbilt Commodores. Still a great game. But I was looking forward to the opportunity to watch Vanderbilt play another number one overall team at home. But Texas had to ruin that for all of us. So horns down, Texas fans.
It was my take it to the bank, by the way.
You were correct about
that. Georgia would go down there and win. And they won fairly easy, all things considered. And there was one of the more bizarre calls I've seen, and it did not end up costing Georgia, but it sort of allowed Texas to get back in the game. And I still don't think I understand what happened, but it is a precedent that I don't think the SEC likes very much.
The whole flag thing.
Yeah, they dropped the flag.
Well, they threw it up in the air. And then they said, well, we're going to honor him throwing it in the air. It's like,
I don't know. There were so many people explaining.
Oh, are you talking about the fans? Yeah, the fans throwing stuff on the field. I was talking about another player.
I was actually driving home from Vanderbilt's win against Ball State. I actually got the chance to go to the game because it was a night game. Predators played that afternoon. And that's when the play happened. And there was confusion from the start. I was actually listening to Texas's broadcast. So they intercept. And they think they've got first and goal at the 8. They're down 23-8, so they're trying to crawl out of a huge hole. They've got a quarterback controversy. So this is all great leading into they're coming to Nashville this week, so I'm thinking about all this. But Georgia's got control of the game. There's an interception. It's called pass interference on Texas. So, okay, it's Georgia's ball. They keep the ball back. And everybody goes crazy because it's a terrible call, mm-hmm. right? It's just a bad call. They start throwing the bottles on the mm-hmm. field. Everybody's going nuts. There's a delay. And then somewhere along here, they're talking, and they decide,
let's change it.
It's not pass interference.
They were fearing for their
lives. I've never seen that. I have never, ever seen it. Because here's the thing. They didn't do it right away. They didn't huddle up and say, wait a minute. I had a better look at this. I mm-hmm. think this is a bad call.
They had a little bit extra time because of all the bottles that were thrown
little bit,
on the
right?
field.
Yeah. More
and
than
by
a
the way,
bit.
Texas was fined $250,000 yeah. for that, and now they are going to try to identify the fans who threw the bottles and ban
luck.
Them.
Oh, they will catch them. They will identify some of them. I guarantee you
they'll
that.
They'll get a few.
Yeah. Yes.
But they put the ball on the 8-yard line and gave the ball to Texas. And Kirby Smart, rightfully so. And Kirby Smart, when he loses his mind, is kind of comically goofy looking. I don't know how to describe it.
He's just throwing his hands up in the air.
Yeah, he's got the visor, his hair's flapping around, and his I don't understand how they did that.
He also cut a heel.
They spotted the ball. They spotted the ball, and Georgia's ready to run a play. And then after all the hubbub, they pick up the ball and they put it in and say, no, it was not pass interference.
And then Kirby Smart, after the game, being interviewed on the field, cut a wrestling heel promo like, the refs were against us. And Rob still pulled it out. Yeah. You know, so.
I like Kirby.
Georgia wins, defeats number one Texas. Texas down to number 5. The Longhorns will be here this weekend to take on the number 25 Vanderbilt Commodores, which is cool to say, and we'll talk to Clark Lee tomorrow as we always do. But the Titans, another, you know, I'm running out of adjectives to describe Titans losses. I'll come up with one. I'll search through my
booty.
Okay, booty work. It was a booty loss. It was a booty loss.
Booty loss
for the Tennessee Titans, who were up 10-0, then lost 34-10.
But in another pretty good half. Like, this is becoming the stat, really. And you pointed this out, Adam. I didn't realize how much that was a factor last year, but they have led or been tied in all but one game at the half.
Correct. They were down 20-7 to Green Bay at halftime. Mm-hmm. Other than that, they've had the leader been tied heading into halftime of every game.
So at least in the first half, you're thinking they're giving themselves a chance to be in the game. It's not a bad game plan. They're doing what they can. Rudolph is staying within his means. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they got away. Well, they sort of got away with a couple of egregious fumbles that ended up not hurting them as bad as it could have. But all that being said, you go into the locker room on the road, up 10-7. Okay. You got the ball coming out of the gate in the second half. All right. But time and time again this year, it just doesn't go well in the second half. Their stats in the second half are nothing close to what they've been in the first half.
They have been outscored in the fourth quarter this season, 57-12, and we'll get into more of this second half issue later in the show, but they have been outscored in the fourth quarter this season, 57-12, and all 12 points came against the Dolphins. So in 5 of their 6 games, they have scored 0 points in the fourth quarter. If football games were only 2 quarters, the Titans would be 4-1-1 right now. They would be on top of the world, but unfortunately, they play 4 quarters of football. And that is an issue that the Titans will need to rectify, which has been a problem not just this season, but seasons prior.
But I haven't looked at the third quarter, but yesterday it was the third quarter where they lost the game. The game was pretty much over by the first play of the – I think it's the first play of the fourth quarter that Buffalo scores, and at that point it's over. The cream rose to the top in a hurry. And they went from stabilizing and being in the game to losing the game before the fourth quarter really got going. So that was – so I'd like to see the third quarter as well in this study we've shown, because we know the fourth quarter is awful. But yesterday the fourth quarter was almost insignificant. If they had scored a couple touchdowns in the fourth quarter, mm-hmm. it really wouldn't have meant anything, because they were already way behind at that point. It was, what, 31-10?
I will check that out during the break about the third quarter. But the story of the game, there was a report from Paul Gaharsky over the weekend. I believe he was the first to have the news that Mason Rudolph would be starting for the Tennessee Titans against the Buffalo Bills in place of an injured Will Levis, who was listed as questionable on the injury report on Friday after our show. He was a limited participant in practice on Wednesday, a full participant in practice on Thursday, and limited on Friday, which led to the questionable designation. Mason Rudolph started out well. He was 10 of 13 passing for 84 yards in the first quarter. By the way, Will Levis had 95 total passing yards last week against the Indianapolis Colts. But I think what we saw over the course of the game is that for those in the Mason Rudolph gives us the best chance to win crowd, you know, I'm not sure either of these quarterbacks give the Tennessee Titans the best chance to win. But Brian Callahan, and we'll carry his news conference live coming up here shortly, Brian Callahan explained after the game yesterday what happened with Will Levis over the past week. This was Brian Callahan after the Titans lost to the Bills yesterday.
What Will did was he was limited on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Thursday, limited. And what went into the up and down, and then also for the last week, he did play.
Yeah. So here's how this happened. He comes off. We came off the bye week in 10 days rest, started practice that week, getting ready for Indianapolis. Felt like he was good enough to go. Everything in practice seemed like it was good. It felt kind of fresh because he came off the rest. Ended up feeling it towards the end of the game on a couple of those throws. It's hard to simulate what that feels like with pressure in your face and having to make that throw. Came out of the game and it bothered him. And then you take a whole load of a week, a game, and then try to come right back on Wednesday and play again. And he felt it. It was sore. It hurt. His mechanics were not where they needed to be. His arm strength felt weakened. He didn't feel great. So we limited him on Wednesday. Tried to get to see if he'd come back on Thursday and go. Went full Thursday with pads on. I had him try every throw that we could possibly throw, every downfield throw all over the place on practice, and came out of that practice and it didn't feel great. And then we went limited again on Friday, and that was when we just made the decision to go with Mason. So the injury's real. He tried to fight through it. I appreciate the toughness and the willingness, but felt good coming off the break, felt good last week. And then as the game went along and he ended up feeling what it felt like with pressure to make the throw, you know, didn't feel as good as he maybe thought he did going into it. So I made the decision, it's my decision to sit him, just because I didn't feel like he could play at the level he needed to play to come in here and win in Buffalo. So that's usually how those injuries go, and he tried to fight through it, and ultimately I decided that it wasn't in his best interest to go out there if he wasn't all the way healthy.
What is his status?
Yeah, it'll be week to week. We'll see how he feels this week. See how he throws it Wednesday. But really the problem with AC, you know, those injuries in his shoulder is they just need rest. You know, and he tried to fight through it again. I appreciate that. Tried to fight for his teammates and come play. But, you know, at the end of the day, those things just need some rest. And right now, that was the right decision for him. So it'll be week to week, and we'll see how he comes out of it.
That was Brian Callahan after the game yesterday. By the way, Willie, my very quick research, the Titans have been outscored 37-31 in the third quarter.
Okay. I wonder where the Miami game factors into that, but either way,
but that was Will. That was the explanation from Brian Callahan about Will Levis, and I believe it was Adam Schefter and our friend Teron Davenport, who will join us at 1 o'clock, reported before the game that it's a grade 2 AC sprain of Will Levis's throwing shoulder. And I am not one typically to dabble in conspiracy theories, but there was a lot of he's being benched without being benched. I heard that specifically on the award-winning pregame show yesterday, which Derek is a part of. I'm not saying Derek was a part of the conspiracy theories, but I would love to know what Derek thinks about how all of this has been handled and whether or not Will Levis, if he wasn't up to snuff against Indianapolis, if he should have been playing in that game, and what you make of the past week and the ongoing Will Levis drama.
The question was posed yesterday. Was it a benching? Do we believe it was a benching? Or is he really hurt and you want him to just sit? And yeah, I couldn't answer it. You know, it wasn't as black and white as the question was. And it's still not as black and white, even though I've listened to Brian Callahan and his assessment of the whole situation and why he chose to do it. I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's if he was playing really good football and this team was, you know, headed into the week, what are they, 1-5 now? If they were 2-4 or 3-3, somewhere around there, I think that possibly you play him. But because everything has gone wrong with him up until this point. Everything's gone wrong with the team. It gives you a built-in excuse to, okay, let's allow him to sit, but also in sitting, let's let that arm rest. If we were in if we needed him, if we didn't have a backup that we believe can come in and sort of run the offense, then we would have threw him out there. But because we do, and things hadn't been going well with him, this is a time or an excuse we can use. And saying the word excuse makes it bad, but it's not. But it gives us the opportunity, because it's been presented to us. It gives us the opportunity to sit him, to allow him to watch, and to heal his shoulder. So when we do throw him out there, there's no excuses. Because we threw him out there last week, and he came up with the excuse, my shoulder was hurting, that's why I couldn't get the ball down the field. That was new to the head coach. The head coach thought, hey, even with a good shoulder, that would have been a good throw. But he made it. So it gives the organization, it gives the head coach an opportunity to say, yes, he's injured, but also thinking in their mind within that building, he needs to sit for a while to watch. It's a built-in excuse, because you know that this is – because if you bench him, you can't go back to him. You can't. You're done. Anybody that think, okay, you can bench the young guy and then go back to him eventually, no, you can't. It's done. That's why Carolina didn't go back to Bryce Young, even though they were getting their ass kicked 37-0. They stayed with Dalton. Because once you make that move, you ain't going back. So they know that with Will Levis. Once they make that move and tell everybody we've benched him, ain't no coming back from that. So this is a built-in excuse. Yes, he's hurt. But yes, he was playing bad and he needs to sit for a while. So that's why I say the question is black and white, but the answer isn't quite black and white.
It would seem like they had the same opportunity. If there's this thinking, he's not 100%, so let's let him sit. They had that opportunity to do it last week against the Colts, decided against it. And then I don't know how much worse the shoulder was this past week than the week before. There was a long talk there about different days at practice. It got worse, et cetera. But that's really interesting to me. I wonder what those discussions were like day to day, because it does seem like a week late. Because I think if Rudolph comes in there and plays the way he did, they could have won against the Colts. Could have. Well, we'll never know. And just like before. And now it sounds like when you say week to week and you've got Schefter putting out things like 4 to 5 weeks, now it sounds like he's going to sit for a while.
Oh, yeah. And you want – again, this gives you an opportunity to say, I am not going to put my young quarterback back in a game until he's 100% so he can make every throw. And that may take a week. So that's an excuse now. So don't ask me about Will Levis starting. I'm going to tell you that Mason Rudolph is the starter at the beginning of the week, and that's how we're going to do it. He may go into practice, and he may be limited, but Mason Rudolph is the guy until Will Levis is fully healthy. But that ain't even a story. That we could have seen that coming. That ain't even a damn story. The incompetence or the perception of the incompetence is the right tackle. That's the story,
and we'll get into that deep.
That is
at some point today,
because that isn't that can be indicative of what's going on inside of the building. And nobody's. I don't know if people are really paying attention to that. I understand the quarterback is it's that guy, so they're going to garner a lot of attention. But that right tackle situation, how it all came about this past game, that is the biggest story. And that's a story that needs to be explained thoroughly by the head coach and the GM.
We might hear an explanation from Brian Callahan on that when his news conference starts shortly. But the Titans' next opponent, the Detroit Lions, 31-29 winners against the previously undefeated Minnesota Vikings. Great game in the NFC North yesterday between the Lions and Vikings. I was telling Derek before we came on the air, considering where the Lions are, and the Titans are, you might need to slap an NC-17 rating on that game next week because it's not going to be appropriate for children under 17.
Parental guidance suggested.
It's heavily suggested. You may not want to watch if you have a weak constitution, you may not want to watch that game. I think of it like about a month ago, I was at Dollywood with the family, and you go up to a roller coaster, and it's like if you have certain conditions, if you're pregnant, if you have a heart condition, you shouldn't ride this ride. All of that applies to potentially watching this Titans Lions game next week, which we will get into over the course of the week. But I have a feeling if you thought yesterday was ugly, this Sunday could be much worse. 615-737-1025. As Derek alluded to, we will discuss the right tackle situation because it's a doozy. We'll continue to talk about Will Levis and Mason Rudolph. We'll talk about DeAndre Hopkins, an interesting scene on the sidelines yesterday with DeAndre Hopkins. Maybe we'll have to bust out the wide receiver translator for that. But what are your thoughts on the state of the Titans? I'm sure they're all positive, but please feel free to share. 615-737-1025. By the way, I was being sarcastic. 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines driven by Wilson County Hyundai.com. We will take you to Brian Callahan next. But before we do, tomorrow it's your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click. If you correctly guess a Preds player that scores a goal in the Preds game tomorrow night, you win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. Participate with Robbie and Rexroad tomorrow morning at 8:45.
Happy Monday, everyone. This is Derek Mason, and you heard me tell you about Dr. Lodge and his staff at Cool Springs MD. You hear that energy, people? That's because I went to Cool Springs MD last week. I had my appointment. I got my blood work done and everything. If you've set out to lose weight, chances are it's not your first time setting a resolution to shed some extra pounds, only to come up a few short. But at Cool Springs, Dr. Lodge and his team understands the frustration of this cycle, and that is why they offer a different approach to weight loss. The comprehensive weight loss program is led by Dr. Lodge and addresses the root cause of weight gain with tailored nutrition, exercise, blood test, supplements, and more. They will customize a program specific to you. People, we're getting older. I'm getting older, and it's harder and harder each year to lose that weight that you want to lose at the beginning of the year or throughout that year. That's why you connect with Dr. Lodge at CoolSpringsMD.com today to schedule your appointment for a personalized weight loss plan just for you. That's Cool Springs MD, where your weight loss journey becomes a success story.
D-Mays, Fingan, and Donick, 1025, 1063, the game. We are awaiting Titans head coach Brian Callahan's Monday news conference. We will bring it to you as soon as it starts. A texter on our text line driven by Wilson County Hyundai.com to extend my roller coaster metaphor says the Titans don't meet the height requirement to get on the Lions ride.
The Lions ride.
The Lions
are
pretty good.
True. It may be true. You're right about that.
Another texter says, did you say state of the Titans or state of the Titanic?
Both. There's some resemblance, so both.
Willie, you did mention something interesting during the break about the state of Will Levis's shoulder that I thought you should bring to air because I thought it was a very interesting question.
Well, I'm guessing there'll be more questions along these lines today, and I would love to hear. And look, they can't box. They have a lot of other problems besides this, but I'm just curious how much worse Will Levis's shoulder is. Because remember, there's a whole bye week from the time he hurt it against the Dolphins to when he practices on Wednesday. And they say, all right, this looks okay. He goes ahead and plays against the Colts. I don't know if he made it worse against the Colts, but he goes from battling through a shoulder injury and being the starter to not even being able to back up. They didn't make him the backup yesterday. I think of quarterback. I feel like there will be quarterbacks in the league that would play with a bad shoulder if needed, at least back up, that kind of thing. And now we go from that to the inference is week to week, he's probably going to miss significant time here. Adam Schefter put out, 4 to 5 weeks, I think, for this grade 2 thing. So did it worsen in the game against the Colts? That would be my question.
Well, Derek, you were on the pregame show yesterday when Teron Davenport made an interesting point that I hadn't considered. Mm-hmm. He was having a conversation with Nick Suss of the Tennessean, who pointed out in the game against the Colts, Will Levis had a collision on the sideline mm-hmm. with a sideline worker who, by the way, required surgery to recover from, it must have been a broken leg, and hopefully he is doing okay. But that, Teron wondered if that collision on the sideline could have impacted his already injured shoulder.
Yeah, it could have. Because let me take you and the listeners inside, sort of behind the curtains in a situation like this, a guy being injured, especially shoulder injury and everything else. And I can only tell you this because I experienced the same thing. When you have a shoulder injury or let's just say an upper body injury, because lower body injuries, they're tricky, even though you may.
Wrong sport, Derek.
Yeah, exactly. Hockey. Let's say upper body, shoulder, whatever. Typically what happens is you come in, some hours before the game, you warm it up, do some exercises, you see how it feels, then they give you a little bit of that good juice, and then you allow that to settle in, then you go back out, you warm it up a little bit more, and it's like, okay, I'm good, I can do it, I'm good, I'm ready, coach. So then as you get into the game, some things you may do, it may, you may fall on your shoulder or whatnot, but you don't feel it right then and there. You may feel a little bit, but not a lot. But as that good juice starts to wear off, then you really starts to thrive, because now you start to feel it. And maybe, just maybe, when that sideline play, when he went out of bounds, fell on his shoulder, it was right as that medicine starts to wear off on him. And now he's starting to feel it a little bit more than what he had previously as the game goes on. Now his arm gets a little tired. Now it's like, okay, I can't. It's just not feeling well. I can finish the game, but it's just not feeling well. So then after the game, now that medicine's worn off, it flares up. Now you've sort of made that injury worse than what it was. That, to me, that's what I've experienced. I experienced that. Like, it feels good, but then as that medicine starts to wear off, man, you land on that shoulder, somebody pulls it. Oh, my God, it feels like I re-injured it again or made it worse. And maybe, just maybe, he made it worse by going out there and trying to play through the pain all while on the good juice. But then once that good juice wear off, it's like, man, I re-injured this, and it may be a little bit worse. So now I go back as a head coach. You go to the bye week. You let it rest some. He comes back out. Okay, it's feeling okay. But then as you start to go through practice, it starts to fatigue. And then, oh, my God, it's worse than what it was 2 weeks ago. So now you got to pull him, because now he can't play. We don't want to risk it. We want to give him some weeks where he can rest. I'm sure that's probably how it went about.
But in hindsight, it looks questionable on some level. He goes from coming off a bye week to this, where it looks like they're telling us now it's a pretty significant injury. Mm-hmm. They didn't say it became worse in the Colts game, I don't think, is what I heard. But they had the opportunity to do exactly what they did yesterday last week. Let's play Rudolph. He got us the win against the Dolphins. Let's make sure Will Levis is healthy. Right?
Yeah.
Then last week, as they're preparing for the Bills, Mason Rudolph said he didn't get all the reps. Obviously, they were still repping Will Levis for a few days to be the starter. And then they pulled the plug. We didn't even find out until Saturday that he wasn't going to play. Right?
Oh, he
was limited.
I'm telling you, they knew.
But Mason Rudolph basically said at the podium, he didn't get all of the reps to prepare being the starter.
But they knew. I am telling you, people in that room knew.
But
why not have Rudolph
take the reps?
We know that, okay, we're going to put him out there in practice. We're going to see, because, again, they're coming off the bye week, and the shoulder seems to feel a little bit better. Okay, let's see what he can do in practice. But our contingency plan is to give Mason Rudolph, some of these reps too, because if he's not injured, Mason Rudolph's getting all but maybe 5 reps during the week. But if there's still that, if it's okay. We're gonna start it off with Levis, and then if it starts to fatigue or we see something, we're gonna start slowly incorporating Mason Rudolph in it. They knew that there was a high chance of Mason Rudolph being their starter, but they're not gonna let nobody know that, and I don't blame them. I wouldn't let Buffalo know that right away. I would let Will Levis kind of go through practice. Don't put a lot on him. See how he handles a little, and then kind of go from there. Well, once we figured out this is a little iffy, okay, let's start getting Mason Rudolph. And if it gets better with a little rest during the week, then okay. But if not, then at least we've given Mason Rudolph some reps. He can go in there and he can perform at a level that could be winning football. But they didn't want to give Buffalo no indication on whether they were going with Will Levis or Mason Rudolph. They held that one in their pocket, and I'm not going to sit up here and get angry with them for doing that. That's me. Other people may, but I understand the tact in it. I understand why you're trying to do what you do, because you don't want to give Buffalo, you know, any heads up of who's going to be our starter.
In hindsight, it just seems like.
Yeah, no,
just,
I get it.
It's just too easy for me to say this now, but I was saying it after the Dolphins game.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like the sensible thing. In hindsight, mm-hmm. again, in hindsight is 2020. They should have sat him before the Colts game.
No, you may be right. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying
they missed an opportunity to do that when he was clearly not 100%. If that's the story they're selling, because the story that I was hearing was his arm's okay. You know, he's making all the throws. That was their story after the Colts game. He had made all the throws in practice.
How much of that do you think is Brian Callahan perhaps trying to prove to everybody that, hey, Will Levis is our guy? He has said it after the game against Miami. When Will Levis is healthy, he's our starting quarterback. Do you think that Brian Callahan felt any pressure? Perhaps he was putting pressure on himself to put Will Levis out there, even if part of his mind thought maybe he's not ready to play. But I have put all of my support behind this guy. I need to get him out there. Do you think that could have possibly played into this at all?
I guess possibly. From where I sit, I'm not around the team every day. I can't really have a good feel for that answer. It's a good question, I think. I do think he was hired to try to get the best out of Will Levis, mm-hmm. and I think he has done his best despite Levis's
shortcomings.
Big shortcomings.
Yeah.
And disappointing performance to try to stand by him. Right?
Yeah, no.
And
I mean,
you could argue maybe he's stood by him to a fault, but he also knows that in the press release, when they fired Mike Vrabel, in that press release, we have a great young quarterback. We need the guy to – it was basically a job opening. We need the guy that can bring out the best in this quarterback. I think that is in the backdrop of a lot of what has happened with Callahan and Levis. He was brought in to try to bring the best out of Levis.
Brian Callahan is at the podium. We will take you there now.
Injury-wise, nothing really changed from last night. I think Jalen Duncan likely missed the week for sure. I'd put him probably in that week to week category, but I don't see him being available this week. Everybody else, again, you're dealing with the normal bumps and bruises and issues, but so we'll see on a couple of guys what it looks like by the time we get to Wednesday. But nothing as of right now that seems, you know, imminent. Got a chance to get Tajay back potentially, so we'll see. We'll see how the days play out, but nothing right now would rule anybody out for the week, and we'll just sort of see how it comes from now until Wednesday.
Said you wanted to for DeAndre Hopkins. He said he was dealing with some soreness and.
Yeah, he had some lower leg soreness, calf, fish, Achilles area, just some soreness in his lower leg. I don't know exactly where it was for him, but it was something in his lower leg.
Is that usually enough to take a guy out?
Sometimes it is. Yeah, it depends on what they feel, and that's usually how it works. So felt a little soreness and tightness and got held. I mean, obviously the, you know, game was a few scores down at that point too, so that's sort of how it goes. We'll see how he comes out of it.
I guess generally tell it the trainer that and then that word gets relayed to you. Is that what happened?
Usually, yeah, I mean, in that situation, it was the very end of the game, and there wasn't – it was, what, the last drive or two. I had heard that he was getting worked down on the sideline, and that's all I really – at that point, it's all I had heard. I didn't know if it was enough to keep him out or not at that point. I was just focused on trying to move the ball down the field, and if he was good, he's going. If he wasn't, he wasn't. So.
Nick, is potentially for air Watson competition, or is there potentially somebody else you could factor in there?
Yeah, I mean, we can factor, you know, we got John Joku on the roster too. So we're going to let those guys go, and we're going to find, you know, something better than what we've had so far. And at the end of the day, I've got to find some sort of solution to it. And guys will get opportunities to do so. And, you know, Leroy will get another opportunity potentially to fight for it. So we got guys in the roster that got to fight. And then if there's somewhere else we got to go outside of it, we go outside of it. And, you know, that's the unfortunate part about where we're at there, and we need to find a solution at some point.
At this point where you're shuffling through so many different options at right tackle, is there any thought to, like, shuffling further where Raiden's or, you know, anything like that?
No, not right now. Honestly, there's not – you know, I thought Dylan's actually done a nice job playing guard for us and is really starting to solidify being a solid player for us. And I would hate to move a guy off of that spot that's playing well, and that'd be a disservice to him. Now, obviously, if you have an injury and you have to do it, that's a different story, but certainly liked his growth so far.
You talk so much about being more efficient on first down, staying under the chains. Just what are the keys to actually doing that? And is there a way to limit penalties, or is that just individual mental stuff?
Yeah, we're trying everything we can to eliminate the penalty part. That's, you know, the false starts have killed us. You know, really, you know, two of the first earned first downs in the game when we're playing pretty well, we get an earned first down, and then we fumble the snap on a first and 10 and turn the ball over. And then we earn first down and try to take a, you know, it's man coverage, play action play. The Mason's getting ready to draw on Ridley, and we give up a sack fumble and turns it into second and 28 or whatever it was. So we had some spots. We're first down, we were starting to kind of pick up some rhythm and going, and we had some issues. And then, you know, we jump off sides. The silent count, that's a tough place to play in the noise, and that was one of the things we had to handle, and we didn't do a good enough job. You do have some issues occasionally when, you know, you're like Chig jumped off sides on a first and 10, you know, where he's off the ball in an alignment that's he can't see the ball, so he's off it, and he's sort of keying the outside defender for the movement to move. And then the nickel flinches across the line of scrimmage, and he flinches because that's what he's looking at in his movement. So those are the challenges of playing on the road, and we didn't do a good enough job of handling it. But, you know, we had some good plays early in the game on first and 10. I don't think we were super efficient on early downs. We were okay. I think we were right around 40% maybe in the first half. But it just wasn't it's the negative plays that have hit us at times and put us off the second half for sure. The penalties, the false starts, the negative run or two that we had, just it's really hard to get going when you're second and 15, you know.
How do you feel like the sideline has been in terms of sideline energy, particularly yeah. in the second half of games, and maintaining positivity through adversity in those second halves?
It's certainly something we need to keep getting better at. I think our sideline's been good. Our guys are focused. They're playing. They play hard. We've gotten into some spots where something bad has happened, you know, where we've lost the lead in the fourth quarter. We haven't, you know, we put our defense in a tough spot, or we give up an explosive play on defense, and it just sort of starts to spiral, and we have to find our way out of that, have to do a better job of eliminating those plays when they happen, and then having the mentality of, you know, when something goes bad, we got to bow up, and whatever phase it is, it's all three phases that have had those problems, and almost you got to take the challenge of, all right, our team needs us in this spot. We got to bow up, and we got to do a better job of doing that. And that's how you win and lose games in the fourth quarter. I mean, all these games around the league come down to possession or two, and we've been in a few of them this year. Obviously, this one wasn't it, but those moments in the game where you have to tighten down all of the things that are happening and really rally, you know, we got to find a better way, you got to do a better job of doing that.
Sorry, you talked about the organization's stance on Will and just taking the mm-hmm. patient approach.
Yes.
Did you and Ran have an understanding with Amy before the season that you guys were going to stick with him through thick and thin this year? And what does that –
understanding look like now when you talk to her at this point in the season?
Yeah, it's the same. You know, everything about what we were hoping to get out of the season was a really solid and concrete evaluation of Will as a starting quarterback. You know, the injury process, you know, we haven't played well enough anywhere around him. He certainly hasn't played up to what I think he's capable of playing. And so we're not in a great spot record-wise. And the injury doesn't help. And hopefully that he's the minute he's back healthy, the intent is for him to continue to play. And hopefully that's sooner rather than later, because I'd like to continue to have him playing football. But I'm not going to let him go out there if he's not where he needs to be to go perform. And so, again, hopefully maybe this week, maybe next week, but sooner than later, you know, he'll be back playing.
So your understanding is that she's comfortable with that patience. She's willing to trust you all to make that decision when it comes.
Everything that she's given, everything that Miss Amy's given to Rand and I is trust and support and to do the job that we think needs to get done. And she's been fantastic. And every conversation we've had is we're all on the same page. And that's been a really positive thing, I think, all the way around for everybody.
We've asked a number of players how to maintain your faith and your confidence, your belief. You've never been a head coach or a play caller, obviously. Mm-hmm. How do you go about doing that? How do you maintain belief and confidence in yourself?
There's moments where, just like every player has too, for me as well, there's moments where you got to keep finding it too. And you have to trust it. And I trust it. I trust myself. I trust everything I believe in, my experiences I've had. I've been in these situations before. I know what they look like. I know how they feel. Found ways to get out of them as well. And so I've got a lot of coaches that have been in these experiences. They know how to get out of them too. And that's part of it, is you trust the people around you. You trust yourself that you've been in these spots and have solutions to the potential issues. And you keep working. And there's really no substitute for that. And you have to come back every week. You got to dust yourself off, pick yourself back up, and get ready for another one. And it's been a challenging first almost half of the year now. And we have to find ways to continue to try to keep improving, with the intent of that we can go try to go win games. And there's no shortcuts to it. There's nothing about the process that allows you to take any time off. You don't get to spend too much time regrouping. You got to get ready to go. And that's how the NFL is, and that's how I've always been too. So we just keep hammering away at it.
About Will needing rest maybe to get better. How will you know when he have to tell you he's pain free, or just have to see something that tells you?
Yeah, it's going to be a combination of seeing, with you know, me seeing it and then him feeling it too. You know, it's both. And you know, I don't know that he's ever going to be necessarily like pain free the way that the season works, but it can also be, you can feel pretty good at some point, and it just needs rest. And hopefully this, you know, not throwing for a handful of days here is helpful, and we'll see what it's like Wednesday. And if he needs another week of rest, he needs another week of rest. But the intent is to get him back healthy and get back rolling with him.
Today he talked about the second half struggles. Mm-hmm. Really seem to start when the other team brings pressure and goes off script. Mm-hmm. Is that just an experience issue for your guys up front, or is it something that you guys have to adapt to?
Yeah, it's all of that. You know, I wouldn't say necessarily off script is the word, but you know, we've gotten, teams have played us a little bit differently than what we see going in because of our reliance and leaning on the run game. So we get a lot more heavy run pressures, heavier boxes, different coverage structures than some other teams because of our sort of run centric approach, and tried to keep them off balance quite a bit with a bunch of the play action yesterday. Some of it was good, some of it we didn't hit on, but you know, that's just sort of how it ends up working. Is they're trying to take away what we do well, which is our running the football, and they've done a, you know, they had every defender down in their line of scrimmage quite a bit, and we tried to action off of it and take some shots off it. So yeah, there's some things that we have to do better, I think, all the way around managing those things, from a schematic standpoint, and then from a player standpoint, adjusting to what looks we've been given.
You said fourth down was kind of dealer's choice in terms mm-hmm. of the analytics decision.
Yep.
When you had a lead,
yeah,
they hadn't really gotten any rhythm. The downside there of giving them the ball in your territory seemed pretty significant. How did you weigh all that? Seems like it's a gut choice if it's dealer's choice in
yes.
terms of the analytics.
Yeah, and that's what it was. And I made a decision to go because I was trying to see if we could you know, coming out of the half, capture some momentum on that first drive, try to keep their offense off the field as best we could. We had done a good job of that in the first half. You know, they didn't have a ton of plays, both because our defense played well and we possessed the ball on offense a bit, and try to let them get going. The other part of it is I did trust the fact that our defense was playing well in both facets, and so to go for it there, you know, they're going kicking into the wind on top of it, which was a tough area, tough direction to kick. And so I thought we had a chance to, if we didn't get it, to stop them. And we had them at third and whatever it was, third and six or seven, right there on about the 30-some yard line. And they were right on the fringe of their field goal as well. So, you know, at worst, we gave up the 3 points trying to be aggressive on it. So that's the mindset. I mean, I know those things, when they don't work, always get second-guessed and always get criticized, you know, when it doesn't go your way. But I don't have a any fault in the process of it and how I looked at it.
Play to the play you ran that was for a loss before. What was the thinking to go back to the same?
Two things. I mean, we went on the fourth and one. We went fourth and one and a half or whatever. We went into a goal line package and we got heavy and they stayed in their nickel package and you know, we didn't execute the play well on top of it, but we felt like we had the advantage there to get a yard and it didn't get executed the way that I was hopeful it would. And They were two different. They're similar style in that the run was a direct run down the middle of the defense, but they're two very different mechanisms of getting there. So, the call at the time felt good. It still felt like it. If we blocked it right, we would have had a chance again. Looking back at it,
did you guys consider challenging the spot on the Rudolph run just before that blitz?
By the time, those are really tricky because you're, you know, that play clock pumps and the replay and the time that I made the call happens sometimes really late in the process. And so I'd already made the call and the replay came back and it was muddy. And I'll say this, and I know I spot challenged last week against Indy in a very similar situation. You very rarely win spot challenges. It's just not over the history of spot challenges. I don't know what the success rate is, but they're low. And they spotted them short. Whether there would have been enough to overturn it or not, got in late enough to where that's sort of a quick decision. And you know, coming off the first drive of the half, throwing a challenge flag on a spot challenge to a third and one that I felt like we should be able to get, just didn't make sense in the moment and didn't have enough information to do it in that spot. So that's generally why. Yeah, it looked like it could have been close, but usually once they spot that thing, it's got to be clear as day. And you, even then, sometimes they're hard to overturn once they go with whatever the call in the field is.
Said that teams have been bringing a lot of pressure at you guys and that he doesn't feel you guys have practiced for some of those looks of pressure and practice, you know, leading up to games. Is there something more that you feel you guys could be doing to be better prepared to face pressure in a game?
Sure. I mean, you don't, you know, some of those things you don't necessarily have a dial in that's what's going to be the game plan, and sometimes, and then show up, you know, those things start to happen. We pressure plenty in practice, but you're limited in the amount of practice reps you get. And so you try to practice what, you know, the numbers would bear out, what their fronts are, what their primary coverage looks are, what the core of what they do. So you try to get those looks in. And then you watch as much film and teach off that as best you can. So certainly we'll be introducing more pressure looks because it's a copycat league and teams do what works when they see it on tape. So we'll do a better job of introducing that stuff. We've done some of it, but obviously, you know, we got to do more of it.
That was Tennessee Titans head coach Brian Callahan addressing reporters at St. Thomas Sports Park. We will react to what Callahan had to say and more coming up next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.